It's Hard Enough to Live, a Daredevil and Hawkeye fic, written and read by 42 Do Not Panic. Summary. After the earthquakes and explosions in New York, Clint Barton can't help but be curious. When he finds an unconscious vigilante, things become a lot more complicated than he had expected. Or, what if someone else found Matt first and he didn't end up at the orphanage?
Say it's hard enough to live. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. How do you know that you're right?
Chapter 1. To Die for Her. Matt clawed his way out of the rubble of the exploded building. He was barely there. He didn't know how he had made it out and how he was still alive, let alone conscious. He didn't know where he was. He still couldn't see, but more pressingly, he couldn't hear. His skin was burning with the heat of the explosion, the wet cold of the water from the cavern, and his own slowly crusting blood. He could taste blood, ash, and dust in his mouth, and he wasn't sure if the blood was also clouding his sense of smell, or if that one was simply gone as well. Rain was thrumming down on him, drowning out what little he could hear of the world, hurting his skin and the countless injuries he no doubt had, and pooling in his mouth. With his unseeing eyes, unsettlingly not hearing ears, clouded mouth and nose, and painfully numb skin, Matt could only follow his instincts and hope it would end soon. The last thing he remembered was sending Luke, Danny, and Jessica away, only hoping they would understand how pressing the situation was and get out of the building before it was too late. And then he was alone. Alone in the cavern, alone with Elektra. He still loved her. He had never truly stopped wanting her after that first meeting at the party he was not supposed to be at, had never stopped loving her after she pulled him into her spell. They had been alone, and Elektra hadn't been the same as she was before. She had died. Matt had buried and mourned her. But yet, she was back. More alive than ever, but also more vicious and brutal than ever. But even if she wasn't the same anymore, even if she truly was the black sky now, Matt could still see the woman he loved in her. She was hidden, maybe from Elektra herself, but she was not lost. So he tried. He tried convincing her. He tried to save both of them. And when that didn't work, he changed his plan. If Matt couldn't convince her to live with him, this was the best he could get. If this was what she truly wanted, then Matt was ready to die for her. He knew he left people behind, but if that was the price he had to pay, well, they didn't trust that he wouldn't hurt them again anyway. At least that way, they could move on. He also knew that this was a painful way to die. He knew they would be crushed and buried underneath a building. He knew tons of stone and metal would rain down on them, breaking every bone in their bodies and forcing the air out of their lungs. He heard the explosion, many stories above them. But in that moment, as he was finally reunited with Elektra, as she wrapped her arms around him and they supported each other so they could stand under the giant ribcage of the petrified dragon, it didn't matter. This was where he was supposed to be. "I'm sorry, Matthew," Elektra breathed, his full name rolling off her tongue in a way only she could manage. He had never particularly liked being called by his full name, but when Elektra did it, it was a different story. And in that moment, it was one of the most painfully beautiful things anyone had ever said to him. "For all the pain I've caused you along the way." Elektra was breathing heavily, and the taste and scent of her blood mixed with Matt's as he pulled her close and she leaned against him. They were both aware these were the last moments they had to live. There would be no second chance this time. There would be no escape. Only death. And for the first time in his life, Matt was not afraid of what came after it. It didn't matter. "You know, we're gonna die here." Matt breathed, his voice rough from pain just as much as it was from desire as he leaned closer yet. He felt every inch of his body pressed against Elektra, felt her thin but strong form through the rough fabric of his battered suit and her breath against his face and neck as she slowly leaned in for a long overdue kiss. But she didn't kiss him, not just yet. No. Electra brought it out instead. This is what living feels like. Matt smirked, the ear-splitting noise far above them was barely more than a whisper as all his senses were honed in on the woman in his arms, as the ground underneath their feet and the walls and ceiling of the cavern all around them started shaking, they finally locked their lips. They crashed together with the same passion and energy they had fought with just moments earlier. Months, maybe even years of suppressed desire and lust bleeding into the touch and the gentle movements of their tongues against each other as the building and the age-old cavern underneath it collapsed around them. Matt didn't feel the rubble and the ruins falling on them. He didn't feel the weight or the pain. All he felt was Electra. All he smelled was her own personal scent. All he tasted was her lips and tongue on his. And all he heard were both their heartbeats, fast but steady. And then everything was over. He couldn't hear, couldn't taste or smell, and couldn't feel. Not like he usually could. He wasn't dead, but it couldn't be long until that changed. There was no way he survived that, and he was not planning on it.
It's not so bad, it's not so bad. How do you know that you're right?
Chapter 2, Or to Live. Clint Barton didn't know a lot about Daredevil. He knew the vigilante had been active, and brutally so, for a while. He knew Daredevil had his very own code of morals. Daredevil never killed. He never hurt the innocent. He was brutal, but he never hurt those who didn't deserve it. A lot of people didn't agree with the way Daredevil tended to solve problems in his city, but Clint could see the reasoning, and, quite frankly, he had done worse in his time. He had used worse methods before, even with S.H.I.E.L.D. He had killed quickly, yes, but also easily. It had been a while since he had last killed someone. Or at least, since he had last killed someone who wasn't an alien and without being brainwashed by an Asgardian half-god. Because, no matter how much Clint regretted every death he had caused under Loki's control, he had also started to accept that those were not his kills, that those deaths were not on him. Clint also knew that the devil of Hell's Kitchen had been awfully quiet recently. He was not just quiet in that he patrolled less often or left less of a bloody trail in his wake. For a while, he had been gone entirely from the face of New York City's streets. Until the mysterious earthquakes and sinkholes started, that was. Conveniently, that was very close to the time the Devil of Hell's Kitchen decided to resurface. From there, it hadn't taken very long to get to where Clint was right now. To where the city was now. It hadn't long between the first time the city had been shaken by the mysterious earthquakes and the night the Midland Circle building exploded. The media, the police, and whoever else was involved in the investigations had very quickly come up with the cover story. It was a story about some underground activity, about gas lines and unauthorized construction. But Clint had been in this business long enough to know there was a different story there. But while he was still an agent on paper, that was mostly a technicality so he could still get a paycheck. He was an Avenger. He didn't have clearance for anything that wasn't directly related to any of their missions. And for reasons he didn't understand, the responsible police department for this case hadn't seen the need to involve them. So while Clint knew there was more to the story, he couldn't actually get to any of the files. And not even his best puppy eyes had convinced any of his old handlers to give him access either. But luckily, Clint wasn't the type to sit at a desk and go the bureaucratic way anyway. Quite the opposite, actually. Clint Barton was the type to get the information he wanted, and if he had to go out and sneak around the site of the explosion in the darkness of the night, Well, that was exactly how he ended up digging through the rubble and debris. What Rory found was nothing like anything he had expected. He had expected to find traces of explosives, he had expected to find signs of a fight. Clint had even expected to find evidence for bodies. He didn't fool himself into thinking that an explosion like that could go without any casualties. Clint had been involved in enough explosions to know that that wasn't realistic. But what Clint didn't expect was to find the known vigilante. At least of all, to find him alive. But maybe alive wasn't the word Clint would use for the state he found Daredevil in. He was alive in that he was not dead, yes, but in every other sense of the word, he was far from alive. The vigilante wasn't wearing his helmet or cowl, and the rest of him was so covered in dust, mud, and blood that it took Clint a moment to recognize the red costume. The man's face was just as bloody and covered in dirt and grime. But given the fact that, from what Clint could tell, the guy had just been buried under at least a few stories of an exploded and collapsed building, he was in a surprisingly good state. For a moment, Clint eyed the vigilante, scrambling for what he was supposed to do. If it were a normal civilian and this was a normal patrol, the answer would be easy. Call an ambulance, dig the guy out of the rubble, and make sure he doesn't die before the paramedics get there. But there was at least two problems with that plan. This wasn't a normal civilian, and Clint wasn't even supposed to be here in the first place. Cursing, Clint started digging the Daredevil out of the rubble anyway. He might not be able to call an ambulance, or anyone else for that matter, but that was no reason to let the guy bleed to death when he might just have saved the entire city, if not more. He wasn't buried too deep. It even seemed like he had made an effort to dig himself out before he lost consciousness, which was a good sign because it meant that at least most of his body must have been functioning at that point, and while he was bleeding from a lung cut in his abdomen, he seemed to be mostly in one piece as well. But of course, that didn't mean he didn't have internal injuries. With how big the explosion had been, Clint would actually be surprised if he didn't have at least a few broken bones. The guy didn't stir. Even after Clint had removed all chunks of stone and metal from it, he didn't move or wake up as Clint pulled him to a dry and flat surface a few feet from the ruins. He didn't seem to show any changes, even when Clint did a quick check over his entire body to make sure he wasn't missing anything important. Tired already, both from the physical work and the knowledge that he was getting himself into yet another situation that would be very hard to explain to anyone else, Clint sat next to the Devil of Hell's Kitchen for a moment. He tilted his head slightly, watching the man lie motionless, and carefully rested a hand on his chest to make sure he kept breathing. For a moment, Clint considered whether this may be a good situation to make use of the recovery position, but while he came to the conclusion that, yes, this was in fact the perfect situation to do that, Clint also couldn't remember what he was supposed to do to get the other into that position. Praying to whatever deity might be out there to hear him that the Devil didn't die because of this, Clint made a mental note that he should maybe take that first aid training Steve kept bothering him about. Clint used the moment that the local vigilante was stable, or at least as stable as one could hope to be while actively bleeding and unconscious on the street, to take a few deep breaths and try to figure out what a responsible person would do in this situation. Call Natasha. That was usually his instinct. But he couldn't do that now. For whatever reason, the Avengers, and what was left of them, were not supposed to be involved. They were not allowed to be involved, as Clint realized then. And that made the whole problem a lot more complicated. Not only was he not supposed to be there because this was an active crime scene, he was not allowed to be here under the Sokovia Accords. It was a miracle that he wasn't in prison in the first place. Those were more infractions than he could afford right now. But what was the alternative? Call an ambulance anonymously and doom the Daredevil to lose his secret identity and probably face just as many legal consequences? No. Clint may not have a secret identity anymore, but he still knew how much was on the line if he had ever lost his before becoming a public figure. No. Clint would not be responsible for ruining his life in even more ways than it probably already was. But that also left only one other option. He turned to look over to where he had parked his bike. It was definitely less than ideal, but it wouldn't be the first time he had an unconscious passenger. He could do it again. It took Clint far longer than he had expected, and maybe for the first time he was glad that Natasha had forced the habit of wearing a helmet onto him, as that was maybe the only way he got the unconscious man through traffic without drawing too much attention to them. Clint still wasn't sure this was the right decision. He wasn't a doctor. He wasn't even particularly good at first aid. Not since he had the entire medical care of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the medbay at Avengers Tower at his disposal whenever he needed it. But he couldn't risk bringing the man there. Not before he knew more about him and knew what exactly was on the line. So instead, Clint brought him up to his apartment. This building was his, and even though it was a lot better now, the tenants knew not to ask too many questions when he came in, bruised, bloody, or beaten half to death. Even if one of them noticed him carrying an unconscious man up the stairs, they wouldn't call the police unless he asked them to. For a moment, Clint contemplated putting the man on his couch, but finally decided that his bed was probably the better alternative. He brought the unmasked vigilante up there, placing him on the mattress and carefully starting to peel the battered remains of his uniform off. In the light of his apartment, once he started to wash the dirt and cross the blood off, the full picture of the injuries started to form. His face was smashed in, one eye had already swollen shut, the bruises were starting to form. His lip was split, but there was blood in and around his mouth that Clint was almost certain didn't come from the surface injuries. As Clint uncovered more of his body, more bruises and cuts started to show. Clint knew this wasn't all the result of the explosion. Just the long and deep cut on his abdomen was proof enough of that, but the suit also did its job. What were bruises now could have easily been broken bones and internal injuries without it. While Clint worked, cleaning and bandaging the injuries, keeping him warm and dry, and generally doing the best he could to keep this unknown man from dying in his bedroom, Daredevil started to stir. He opened his eyes a few times, twitched as Clint poured alcohol over his wounds, and even seemed to be muttering something he didn't catch. But while he was definitely alive, and even somewhat reacting, he didn't quite manage to claw his way back to consciousness. And except for small moments where he was groaning or muttering things or reacted to Clint's changing of bandages or checking his injuries, that didn't change for multiple days. Clint was nervous, and with every day and every hour that passed without the man seeming to get better, he questioned his decision to take him in instead of bringing him to a doctor or at least telling the other Avengers. Clint barely slept. He didn't dare leave for longer than absolutely necessary, and he only answered Natasha's calls because he knew she'd just show up in his apartment if he didn't. Instead, Clint paced the room and tracked the man's vital signs. He didn't eat much, and if he did, it was either greasy delivery food or the scraps he found in his pantry. Instead, he drank coffee and other caffeinated drinks to the point where it started to get concerning, even for his standards. When the Daredevil finally did wake up, it wasn't the slow clawing himself back to consciousness Clint usually experienced. He moved, his hand feeling through the air, almost as if he was searching for something. That was the first thing Clint saw from the armchair he had dragged from a corner to where he could keep an eye on the man. The next thing was his drawling, no, asking for something. It was a word he had muttered multiple times before, but until now he had never been quite clear enough for Clint's busted hearing to pick up, but now he realized it was a name. Electra. The man stirred, and even before Clint could cross the few feet of distance between them, he was already trying to get up. Where? He asked, and Clint had to physically push him back into the mattress. You're safe. Don't get up. Or move in general, just to be sure. Clint pushed his shoulders into the mattress with a little more force than was strictly necessary, but he knew for himself and the hours of luxurious Natasha, Bruce, and Phil had given him that the vigilante type was not one to stay down, just because they had been crushed by a building and unconscious for a week. How long? How long? The man muttered, still struggling against Clint. About a week. Now, please lay down. I'm not 100% sure you don't have internal injuries. Clint answered, weirdly eyeing the man. He seemed to be staring off at the ceiling, but that worried Clint more was that there was already a small spot of blood on the bandages wrapped around his stomach. The man ran a finger over his ear and winced slightly. Then he drifted off again for a moment. But just as Clint let go of him again, he was back. Where is she?
Who?
I don't know what you're talking about, devil. There was no one else with you, Clint answered, trying to remember if he could have missed something or if there was any mention of deaths in the admittedly very patchy news coverage of the explosion. But before Clint could even fully finish his answer, he had to push the vigilante back down again.
Electra,
No, you're not getting up just so you can die on my bedroom floor. I've spent too much time patching you up, Clint said, starting to understand why people tended to threaten to tie him to gurneys so often.
Daredevil repeated, but whatever he wanted to say was drowned out by a pained groan as he managed to push past Clint. As he started slowly getting up, the pain seemed to catch up with him more and more. But even as Clint tried to get him back onto the mattress without jostling his injuries too much, something else seemed to catch the devil's attention.
My right ear, I can't, he muttered, his hand hovering in the air next to it and his face contorting in pain.
Yeah, welcome to the club, Clint muttered, more to himself than to the other man, and at the same time, he put weight on his worst side.
Stop, you're just making everything worse! The bruises all over his left side had taken on truly glorious colors over the last week, and while Clint had checked for any obvious broken bones or dislocated joints, he suspected that even the armor couldn't have spared the man from some kind of injury. And the fact that his leg gave in almost immediately and the man fell to the ground, just narrowly avoiding the foot of the bed, was all the proof Clint needed.
God damn it! He cursed as he kneeled down next to the man and supported him as he kept staring off into an unknown distance.
No, I can't see. I can't see! He kept groaning the same three words, getting louder and more panicked every time he repeated himself. For a moment, there was nothing Clint could do but watch the man panic in his arms. The devil was bleeding again, and unconsciously, he seemed to notice that as he pressed a hand to the injury. But until the panic attack pushed him back to the other side of consciousness, there was nothing Clint could do about it.
You're gonna be the end of me, Clint sighed as he heaved the man back onto the bed and started unwrapping the blood-soaked bandages.
The next time the Daredevil woke up was the next afternoon. Clint had barely slept, only drifting off when he could no longer keep his eyes open despite the fact that he probably had more caffeine than blood in his body. When the man stirred this time, he didn't try to get up, and Clint was thankful for it, as he didn't know how many times he would manage to play the scenario of the previous evening. This time, the first thing he did was feel for his ear. The pained reaction he had the first time didn't follow. Instead, he seemed almost defeated in the way his head barely tilted. The next thing he did was hover his hand over the fresh, not yet stained bandages, carefully feeling over them but not moving to look. Instead, he just kept staring up.
Devil?
Clint asked carefully. The vigilante winced slightly, his head twitching a little as if he were trying to figure out where the sound had come from. But after less than a second, he seemed to give up.
You're still here.
Yeah, like I said, I put way too much effort into making sure you survive. I'm not letting you die now. Clint answered bitterly and stepped closer so the man could see him. But even as he walked around the bed and kept talking, the man barely seemed to be able to track him or the room.
I'm Clint.
Clint Barton. You're in my apartment. You're safe here. As Clint spoke, the vigilante kept twitching his head, but he still didn't seem to be able to locate him.
How did I get here?
I found you in the ruins of the Midland Circle explosion and brought you here. I know your type. I didn't think you'd appreciate being in a hospital in the suit. Clint answered, pulling the chair closer and sitting down as he didn't think the man was an active flight risk at the moment.
You know who I am?
The devil of Hell's Kitchen asked.
Who else knows?
Panic seemed to be setting in again.
No one. It was the middle of the night and I haven't told anyone that you're here. And from what I can tell, the media doesn't even know that you were there in the first place.
He assured. He knew this fear. He knew how much it could cost when his secret identity was revealed to the wrong people.
Electra. The man said it again. Flynn still hadn't figured out what that name meant, even though he spent most of the night researching it in every database he could get access to. She was with me when the building collapsed. Buddy, I still have no idea who that is, but there was no one else at the ruins, and the media didn't say anything about casualties. So either she is buried so deep that they haven't found her yet, or she somehow made it out before I got there. Flynn didn't try to sugarcoat the reality. There were enough hard things to come. Joking around them like the devil was fragile was just make everything more complicated. And that wasn't Flynn's strong suit anyway. Do you have a name? I could probably find it out if I ran you through S.H.I.E.L.D. systems, but I'm not entirely sure who has access to my search history at this point, so I don't really want to do that. For a moment, the vigilante didn't react. In the way he still wasn't even trying to look at Flynn started to feel unsettling. But after a moment, the man seemed to decide that giving the answer freely was his better bet. Matt. Matt Murdock. Murdock. Flynn repeated. The name rang a bell, even if he wasn't sure we had heard it before. For a moment, he rolled it around in his head, and when he couldn't remember it, he decided that there was time for that later. Instead, Clint got up and carefully leaned over the bed, eyeing the devil's face. He wasn't sure how best to approach what he had wanted to ask next. Up close, Matt's eyes seemed to stare right through the ceiling, while at the same time, the panic of the night before seemed gone entirely. Clint didn't know how he should interpret that. Matt? He asked carefully, and even though he was sure he had pitched his voice to a normal level, the other startled slightly, and his head began moving as if he tried to locate the sound again, which really wasn't helping the unsettling appearance. Do you remember yesterday night, after you tried to get up? I ripped my stitches. Matt started feeling over the bandage around his stomach again. I fixed it, don't worry. That's not what I meant. Clint sighed, looking at the pile of bloody bandages and gauze pads in the overflowing trash can. Do you remember what you said? Matt closed his eyes for a moment, and as soon as he started speaking, his hand ghosted over his right ear again. I guess it was some sort of flashback or memory. A memory? Of not seeing? Clint asked, confused and maybe a little scared. Seeing was the one thing that he was really good at. That's why they called him Hawkeye. Losing that was maybe one of his greatest fears, even if it was just temporary. No. A memory of seeing. The devil deadpanned. I've been blind for more than 20 years. Clint swallowed against the lump in his throat. That actually explained a lot of the reactions Matt had shown since he was awake. It explained why he still seemed to be looking right through the ceiling and why he hadn't tried to look in Clint's direction once. But it also explained why he was so disturbed by the fact that he still didn't seem to be able to hear properly from both ears. So you can't see? He asked, and Matt nodded. And now you also can't hear properly. Yes. I've been totally blind since I was a kid, but now I also can't hear from my right ear. I can't smell, and everything just tastes like my own blood and ash. He said, defeat and misery in his voice. Drink. That might help the taste. Clint handed him a glass of water. What about your injuries? How's the pain? After taking a sip and miraculously not spilling any of it onto his bare chest, he answered. Bearable if I don't move, excruciating if I do. It was more of a question, and somehow it almost seemed as if Matt was trying to joke, even if it did nothing to brighten himself up. Like I said, I'm no doctor, and obviously I don't have any medical equipment, but from what I do know, it seems like you were damn lucky. Whatever you were doing in Midland could have ended a lot worse, Clint explained, sitting back down in his armchair as it didn't make much of a difference anyway. Matt just scoffed. Worse? How? I can't hear, I can't smell, I can't even move, and for what little I can tell of my injuries, it doesn't seem like they will get that much better. This time, he didn't just seem defeated. He seemed like he had already given up. Dude, you could have died. I didn't expect anyone to survive that explosion, and for a while, when you didn't wake up, I wasn't sure you'd make it at all. I wasn't joking when I said I saved your life. Clint noticed that he had gotten up and started pacing, and even though the other couldn't see that, the movement of the sound seemed to irritate him, and, well, Clint knew that feeling, so he did his best to calm himself and stay at the devil's left side. Yes, maybe you're injured and maybe you won't be able to go backflip over rooftops at night anytime soon, but you survived an explosion and a fucking building collapsing on top of you. How would you take it when one day you're out avenging and you're fighting in a fight you were forced into as a child, and no matter that you spent the last 20 years running from that fight, you are now right back in the middle of it. And not just that, your city, everyone you love and everyone who has ever meant anything to you are pulled into it. But you fight, because that's what you do. You fight because that's your job. You fight enemies that were supposed to be dead, people that you have seen die. But they're back. The devil was getting more and more agitated and started to push himself up. The pain must have been excruciating, but apparently the rage was stronger as he just kept going. And not just enemies, your past is back. The woman you loved, the woman who died in your arms, she's back as well. But now she's even more powerful. She's a living weapon and she's on the other side of the war. Elektra. Clint breathed. Elektra is the woman you loved. The woman who died. That's why I read your name. I saw her obituary. But the vigilante didn't seem to hear him as he just kept going. But you keep fighting, and everything, every case you worked on, every enemy you fought, everyone you met along the way, all ends in this. It all ends in this fight. You have to make impossible decisions, and you make them. You decide to place explosive, and you decide to get below the building to save your friend's life, and maybe, just maybe, still find a different solution. But nothing goes according to plan because she is there. And even if she's different, you still see the woman you fell in love with. So you make another hard decision, even though you know what's on the line. You decide to give her another chance because you think you can convince her. So you stay. You send everyone else out of the building and you stay. Even though you know there are explosives that will collapse the entire building on top of you in a matter of minutes once they're triggered, you stay. You fight her, to try convince her, and you try to get her to follow you out, but she won't budge. He sank back into the pillow and closed his eyes again, but didn't continue speaking. But Clint started to understand. You didn't convince her, he said simply. Matt laughed bitterly. No, I didn't. But I didn't have to, she was right. That was right where we were supposed to be. That was where I wanted to be. I have made a decision, and it was the right one. You decided you'd rather die with your enemy than live with everyone who ever meant anything to you. I decided I'd rather die as the devil than live as Matt Murdock. Matt corrected him, turning away from Clint. No, it was Clint's turn to laugh bitterly. But you don't get to make that decision. He walked around the bed so he could face the beaten-up vigilante again. You don't get to make that decision. No one does. The devil scoffed, and even though he didn't say anything, Clint knew what he wanted to spit out. We have all been there. I don't know a single hero who hasn't been so low that they wanted to give up. Bruce, Tony, and Nat have all been there. Steve, Sam, Bucky, they're literally national icons and decorated war heroes, and they're out there somewhere, running. Don't you think they have thought about giving up? Don't you think they have thought about just giving in, accepting whatever sentence they were supposed to get for just doing their futzing job? Clint took a shaking breath to calm himself and kneeled on the floor next to the bed. Every single one of us has been there. Every single one of us wanted to give up, but no one gets to make that decision. There are people out there who need us. People who need you. Not as the devil of Hell's Kitchen, but as Matt Murdock. And you don't get to decide to throw that away. Not as long as you are very much alive and breathing. Clint extended a hand to touch the vigilante's arm, but hesitated and pulled back just before the skin touched. He knew the way Matt was feeling. He knew it all too well. And he also knew that in situations like that, sometimes people needed someone to push them into their own luck. So, Are you going to tell me who I can call without accidentally revealing your secret identity to someone who just knows civilian you? Or should I just call people you have been associated with online until I find one who can tell me more about you?
Say it's hard enough to live. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. How do you know that you're right?
Chapter 3. For them. For a very long moment, nothing happened. Matt didn't answer. He didn't move. And it wasn't for the way he was still curled around the cut on his stomach, even though it must have aggravated his injured hip and back, Clint would have thought he didn't even hear him. After long minutes, just as Clint was about to cave in, get his laptop out, and start scouring the web for anything he could find about Matthew Murdock, the man muttered a name. Claire. Claire Temple. Relieved, Clint nodded and sighed. Thank you. He got up, but before he started searching for her information so he could call and tell her the good news, he leaned down again and carefully touched the vigilante's shoulder. You did the right thing, even if it doesn't feel like it yet. Matt scoffed again, but this time the sound and the expression that accompanied it were more painful and defeated than before. The devil had given up. Whatever had happened immediately before the explosion, and Clint was sure the part that Matt had revealed to him was nothing more than a glimpse into the events, Matt hadn't just accepted that he would die down there. He had given up. Clint sighed and went back to the armchair on the other side of the room. He regretted getting himself into this. He regretted taking the stranger home. He regretted not asking for help. He regretted committing to solving this on his own. And maybe most of all, he regretted getting attached. But it was too late to give up now. It was too late to call Natasha, or S.H.I.E.L.D., or Bruce. He couldn't do that. Not when the devil had just started trusting him, or at least trusting him enough to give him his name and a contact number. And it was definitely too late to distance himself emotionally. He couldn't not be attached to this man after everything he had done for him. Maybe someone like Natasha could have. But then again, all the Avengers were giant mother hens. Even if they all showed it differently. Clint wasn't sure if it was possible to be a superhero without caring a little too much for every single person they saved. Clint had to push those thoughts away as he opened his laptop to search for this woman. Claire Temple. At first, Clint didn't find anything specific, but once he added Hell's Kitchen to the search term, he found something promising. Maybe a small part of the devil hadn't quite given up yet. I've got a former nurse at Metro General. Is that her? Clint asked carefully. Matt took a deep breath, but Clint didn't think it was because he had to think about the answer, but rather because he still wasn't sure if he wanted to do this, and it seemed to take him a while to make this decision. But finally, after endless seconds, Matt nodded. Nodding back, even though Matt couldn't see it, even if he was facing him, Clint continued searching and quickly found a phone number. Anything specific you want me to tell her, or should I just tell her you're alive and ask if she can come here? This time, Matt shook his head, still not speaking. Okay, here it goes. But it took Clint longer than he was willing to admit to actually dial the number he had found and make the call. Phone calls had never been his strong suit, even after years of working for a government agency. They had never been, but since he lost his hearing, there was even more things he hated about talking on the phone. And telling a random woman that her, whatever Matt was to her, was not, in fact, dead, even though he had been missing for a week after being caught in an explosion, and Clint didn't even know if she knew about that. No, he told his racing thoughts. It didn't matter. If Matt trusts her enough to be the one to call, then she will somehow handle this. So he dialed, and pressed the call button before he could start overthinking it again. The phone rang a few times, but finally a young woman picked up. "Temple?" she asked. Clint wasn't good at telling tone, especially with the distortion of the phone, but the defensiveness in her voice was still clear. "This is Clint Barton." He introduced himself and had to fight the instinct to give his full agency rank. "Clint Barton? As in Hawkeye?" Claire answered, and there wasn't the surprise in her voice that Clint would expect someone to have when answering a call from a superhero. It sounded more like defeat. "Shouldn't you have someone to patch you up already? Isn't there an entire medical wing in that fancy tower of yours?" This conversation was not going the way Clint expected. "Yes, there is, but this isn't about me." He trailed off, unsure what to say. "Then who is this about?" The woman seemed a little too used to this kind of call, so Clint decided to just lead with the truth. "Matt Murdock," he said, then added, "Daredevil." This time the line was quiet for a moment, and when Claire spoke again, her voice had changed, even if Clint wasn't quite sure how to interpret it now. "I didn't know the Avengers were involved in the cleanup." So clearly, she knew Matt had been involved in the explosion. And if Clint interpreted the rest of the conversation, she was involved with multiple other vigilantes, so maybe she was also involved with the entire situation. "They're not. This is not Avengers business. This is Hawkeye business. The Hawkeye I was before the Avengers. So we both would appreciate it if it stayed as low-key as possible." "We?" Claire said, with a slight hitch in her voice. "Yes. I went to the site of the explosion the next night, and I honestly didn't expect to find much, but I can't help being curious. That comes with being an agent for so long." Clint noticed he was rambling to get around the point, so he took a deep breath and forced himself to bring it out. "But I found Daredevil," he said. "Alive." For a moment, the line was quiet again. And when Claire spoke again, the pain was clear in her voice this time. "It's been a week. We called every hospital and every doctor. They've been searching the ruins. Why are you only calling now? We thought he was dead." "He only woke up today. I didn't know who I could call. I don't know any of you," Clint explained. This was a lot more than the conversation he had expected. "Where are you? I'm coming to you." She said that, leaving no room to argue. Not that Clint would. Even he wasn't dumb enough to tell a nurse she couldn't see her injured, whatever Matt was to her. So instead, he rattled down his address, but before he could finish telling her the apartment number, he cut him off. "Bed-Stuy? What the fuck is he doing in Bed-Stuy? Please tell me he hasn't been lying in some apartment unconscious for a week after that fight." But Claire sounded like she knew exactly what the answer was going to be. "I couldn't risk taking him to a hospital in the suit," Clint started, but was cut off right away again. "Screw his secret identity! From what Danny and Luke said, he was already beaten up enough when they left, and that was before he was alone with Elektra. Not to mention the fact that he was buried under an entire building! He could have died, Hawkeye! It's a miracle that he survived that in the first place!" She was really angry now, and Clint thought he heard keys and a coat rustling in the background. "I'm coming over, and if this is not an actual honest-to-God miracle, he's going to a fucking hospital!" She took a breath, but didn't leave time for Clint to say anything before she continued. "Tell him that, and tell him I'm bringing Foggy!" Before Clint could reply, Claire had already hung up. He stared at the phone for a moment. On the one hand, he hadn't expected any of her reactions or the way she seemed like she almost expected something like this to happen. But then again, if she was running in the circles of vigilantes and small-time heroes, this couldn't be the first time she was called with some ridiculous news. Clint could still remember all the times he had crawled home, beaten, bloody, and barely alive. If she was the person those heroes called, she must have seen them at their absolute worst. Just this was even one level above that. Clint ran a hand through his hair, put his phone and laptop on the small box next to him, and cleared his voice. "So, that was something," he started, but again, the devil didn't move. Sighing again, Clint walked the few steps to the bed and lightly rested a hand on Matt's lap. "You should lie back down. I don't know how bad your injuries are, but this can't be good for them." He let the words hang in the room for a moment, then added, "And it must hurt like hell." This time the devil reacted, and Slynn slowly and carefully guided to lie him on his back again. "What did she say?" the vigilante asked hesitantly, closing his eyes as if to brace himself for the answer. "She yelled at me for not taking you to the hospital, and she says she's coming here now and to tell you she's bringing Foggy." Clint decidedly did not tell Matt that she was planning to take him to a hospital. That was a crisis he didn't want to start just yet. Preferably, he didn't want to have it at all, but Claire didn't seem like she could be talked out of this. The devil sighed and nodded defeatedly. He still didn't seem to be convinced this was a good idea, but at the same time, Clint thought he must have expected the outcome. It took Claire a little over an hour to get to Clint's apartment, and when he opened the door to her ringing the doorbell, he immediately cleared the way and gestured to the stairs that led to the bedroom. "He's up there." He knew better than to stand in the way of a nurse. "Is he really alive?" the man, Foggy, who followed behind her, asked. He was dressed in a business suit and looked like Claire had called him at the office. Clint had researched Matt a little more while they had waited, and he was almost certain that this was Franklin Nelson, Matt's former partner. "Yeah," Clint nodded, trying for a reassuring smile. But either Foggy still couldn't believe it, or the smile missed the target, as it did nothing to calm the man. Clint gestured for Foggy to follow the nurse, who had already vanished into the bedroom, but while he closed the door, he realized he should probably warn him about Matt's mental state. "Foggy?" he asked, walking up behind him and lightly touching his shoulder. "Yeah?" The lawyer turned around, fear and pain clear in his face. "He's not in a good place," Clint said. It wasn't the best way to say it, but he also didn't want to talk around the topic and keep Foggy from seeing his friend any longer than absolutely necessary. I don't know what exactly happened down there, but he didn't plan to make it out. Foggy took a deep breath and nodded. "I mean, I don't know why I'm even surprised." He turned to the stairs, then back to Clint. "Can I?" "Yeah, of course. I just thought you should know that." Clint sighed, following Foggy up the stairs to where Claire was already examining Matt. "He's damn lucky he didn't die in there," she told Foggy as soon as he walked in. "But he's going to have a long road of recovery in front of him. It's not going to be easy." Matt was just lying on his back, exactly the way Clint had helped him position himself an hour early. He was still staring into an unknown distance. Foggy stood at the door for a moment, seemingly still not believing what he was seeing was real. Then he moved to sit on the bed on Matt's right side. "You idiot," he breathed, taking his hand gently and shaking his head. "Matt, you're such a damn idiot." Matt still didn't answer, but he turned his head, not to face Foggy, but so he could hear him with his good ear. "He says he can't hear from his right ear," Clint commented hesitantly, earning himself a glare from Claire. "You better start telling me everything else you know as well," she said this while taping a fresh bandage over the cut on Matt's stomach. Before Clint could answer, though, she looked up. Her expression was softer, and the worry started to show through. "Good job on the sutures. It would have been nasty to heal otherwise." Clint nodded appreciatively, glad he hadn't messed up completely. Then he sat down on the armchair and picked up his laptop. "I wrote down everything I noticed. I'm not a professional." Claire threw him a raised eyebrow, but didn't interrupt him. "But I have been on a lot of missions without extraction or medical support." Clint read Claire the most significant details of Matt's injuries, noticing Foggy wince multiple times throughout. When he was finished, Claire sighed. "Matt, you know what I think of this. And even without the right equipment, it's pretty obvious you messed up your hip and possibly your spine. I can do a basic exam on your ears, but I'm not a doctor, especially not an ENT or an orthopedist. It is pure luck that you survived, but without the proper treatment, you will not be able to recover from this one." Matt closed his eyes and took a deep breath.
I can't go to the hospital, Claire.
The nurse sighed. The earlier anger had seemingly dissipated entirely. Instead, she had an expression Clint knew all too well. It was the same tired yet oddly fond look of disappointment Natasha gave him when he did stupid things and got hurt in the process.
She's giving you the "I love you, but you're an idiot, Claire," Foggy commented. He sounded a little cut off, like he was trying not to cry.
Matt, this could have serious consequences, not only for Daredevil, but for Matt Murdock as well. Claire sighed, digging through her bag and taking out an octoscope. Clint wasn't even surprised she had those things in her bag.
"I'll check your ears now, left side first," she announced.
It seemed like Claire knew exactly what Matt could and couldn't tell and which things she had to announce and which she could just do without. When Matt nodded, she did the exam and then walked around the bed and did the same on the other side.
"You can't smell either?" she asked, and Matt nodded again. This time, the movement was barely noticeable.
Claire nodded as well, getting up to dig through her bag again.
"I've got an idea that might help, but once again, I'm not a doctor. I can't give you a diagnosis." She turned to Clint. "Can you bring me a bowl and some warm saline solution?"
"Sure." Clint nodded, going downstairs and coming back with a plastic bowl and a pitcher of water a moment later. When he entered, Claire had helped Matt to sit up, and Foggy was supporting him. Claire put the bowl on Matt's lap and filled a neti pot, like Clint remembered it from his childhood with the saline.
"So, tip your head back, please.
This is not going to be comfortable, but if I'm right, it should help at least some," she explained.
"Yes, I remember how it works,"
Matt muttered, reluctantly tilting his head and wincing as his weight shifted.
"Okay, try to keep still,"
Claire instructed, placing the device against Matt's nostril and tipping it slowly. The water running from Matt's nose was tinted red, and he started coughing up blood. Claire repeated the process a few times on both sides until Matt shook his head lightly and gestured for her to stop.
"I think that's it."
He coughed up some more blood and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. For a moment, Clint, Foggy, and Claire just stared at him. Matt winced with every movement, but as he tilted his head and slapped his fingers, a pained smile tugged at the corners of his mouth.
"Better?"
Foggy asked hopefully, helping Matt lie down again.
"Yeah, better,"
Matt muttered, struggling to keep his eyes open. "This should have cleared the blood and dust from your nasal cavities, but from what the others said, y'all took quite the beating down there, and that was only what they saw. Everything's still swollen and probably will be for a while. Once it goes down, your hearing might get better as well, but it might never be quite as good as it used to be," Claire explained, weirdly running a hand over Matt's arm.
"I'm not dragging you to a hospital, Matt, but you should see a doctor about this, about all of your injuries."
"Can't go to the hospital," Matt muttered again, already drifting into sleep. When Matt was fully asleep again, the other three went down to the living room and Foggy excused himself to make a phone call.
"I wanted to be absolutely sure before I called Karen. She's been through enough shit, she doesn't need false hope right now," he explained.
Claire sat down with Clint, looking over the notes he had mailed while taking care of his unconscious patient.
"I am right in assuming that lecturing you about how stupid this entire thing is won't change anything?"
she asked while scrolling through the document, highlighting and typing her own notes in places. Clint ducked his head, but admitted,
"It didn't help when Nat and Steve tried."
Claire said again, and it started to lose its meaning.
"You vigilante types are all the same."
She put the laptop to the side and leaned her head into her arms.
"I just can't get away from this," she breathed, more to herself and barely loud enough for Clint's hearing aids to pick it up.
Before Clint could say anything, Foggy was back, gently running a hand over Claire's back.
"What do you think?"
Claire scoffed defeatedly.
"He had some kind of guardian angel down there, that's for sure."
Then she picked the laptop back up and showed him the notes. "He has a lot of surface wounds, but even the cut on his stomach is nothing compared to what Nobu did to him. Like I said,
I can't say much about his hearing. As long as he refuses to go to a real doctor, we can just wait and hope the swelling going down helps. She gestured to the screen, pointing to the section about Matt's hip and back. Same thing goes for his hip and back, really. I'm pretty sure he broke his hip and or pelvis. If it was just bruised, it would get a lot better after a week of bed rest. Especially he probably didn't move much at all. She looked over to Clint, who nodded. Both would take weeks, probably months, to heal properly, and both are pretty painful. His back seems to be in better shape. A lot of the pain could stem from the other injuries and will get better once he heals and he can start PT. But I won't lie. It will probably take a few more weeks until he's ready for that. He looked between Clint and Foggy for a moment. I won't force him to go to a hospital, but this would be his best option. Then I will! Foggy exclaimed indignantly. I can't lose him again. He may be ready to go, but I won't let him. They will ask questions, Clint said. It wasn't meant to change Foggy's mind. It was just one more problem they were facing. Claire nodded, running a hand over her face again. The hip, the back, and even the head injuries could be explained by a fall, but every medical professional will see that those aren't fresh injuries, and the bruises and cuts don't match up. Even if most people's minds don't immediately go to beating criminals up at night, domestic abuse comes to mind. Clint agreed. And the depression, suicidal tendencies, it does all match. Foggy nodded, but after a moment, he sighed again. He won't agree. He couldn't do it. We've worked on domestic abuse cases, and he has fought domestic abusers. He'd be too worried he'd cause harm to those who are actually in that situation. Clint had to ball his hand into fists, though the other two didn't notice he was shaking. He opened his mouth and wanted to say something, but the words didn't make it past the knot in his throat. When he looked up from his hands, both Claire and Foggy were looking at him expectantly. Huh? He frowned for a second before realized that the other must have asked a question. Sorry, I didn't get that. He brushed his hair back so his hearing aids were fully visible. You're deaf? Foggy blurted, wincing and embarrassed as soon as the words left his mouth. Your boyfriend is blind. I don't think you get to judge here. Clint bit back. This was exactly the reason he didn't like putting it out there that he used hearing aids. Both Claire and Foggy snorted at that comment, and when Clint raised an eyebrow, Foggy shook his head. College me may have wished for that, but no, not my boyfriend. Not anyone's boyfriend, Claire commented. Clearly, there was more to the story than Clint knew about, but he didn't ask. Foggy schooled his expression, turning back to Clint. And I didn't mean to blurt it out like that. I'm just surprised, that's all. Clint looked at him with a raised eyebrow again. The tension in the room was starting to get palpable. So what did you want to know? He asked, instead of commenting on Foggy's surprise again. What about Avengers Tower? Claire asked. You said you have a medical wing there, right? Clint sighed. We do. But not only would Ned literally kill me for not telling her, we would probably all end up behind bars. Vigilantism, sneaking around active crime scenes, everything that happened at Midland Circle. And since the Sokovia Accords, the Avengers are not free to do what is right without actively being sent out anymore. Matt and me, and honestly, probably everyone else involved in this, would be criminals in the eyes of the state. Foggy cursed under his breath. Can we not bring this up to Matt? He asked tiredly. Both Claire and Clint nodded. So, if we can't bring him to the tower and if we don't want to disguise this as a case of domestic violence... Claire didn't end the sentence, but everyone knew what she was gearing towards. For a few minutes, no one said anything. Clint made coffee, and Claire went to check on Matt again. He was still sleeping, which was generally good, as it meant he got the rest he needed and couldn't be in too much pain. Clint had curled up in his favorite armchair, yawning from time to time and cradling his cup. After a while, Claire looked at him, hair tilted and a new kind of worry in her eyes. You've done all this alone, right? Clint didn't catch what she meant. Yeah, no one knows. Don't worry, you're the first. Claire cut him off with a gentle smile. That's not what I meant, Clint. You're allowed to rest, and you need to take care of yourself. I'm fine. But the rest of the sentence was drowned out by a yawn. Did you eat? Did you sleep? Did he drink water? Claire asked, and she made it clear that she would not take any excuse, so Clint just shook his head. Sighing, Claire nodded, then turned to Foggy. Can you ask Karen to bring takeout? Foggy nodded and went to call Karen again. While he was in the hall, Claire sat on the arm of the couch, where she was closer to Clint. Get some rest. Maybe even sleep. We got this. You did everything you could. Her voice was gentle now, and Clint pulled his feet closer underneath him, nodding before leaning his head against the back of the chair. When Foggy came back after a few minutes, Clint was already not paying attention to the conversation anymore, and when Karen came around 20 minutes later, he had drifted into sleep. By the time he woke up again, about an hour and a half later, the other three were in the bedroom. Someone had covered Clint in a blanket, and then there was a box of Chinese food on the coffee table. Clint yawned and stretched, searching for one hearing aid that must have fallen out while he was asleep. Once he had found it, he picked up the food and tapped up the stairs. Hey, he greeted the room hesitantly. Mind if I eat here? No, come in. Foggy gestured for the pile of takeout containers on Clint's dresser. We found a solution for our problem, Claire said. She was sitting on the armchair in the corner. Foggy was sitting on the ground next to her, and a blonde woman, Karen, Clint guessed, was sitting on the mattress next to Matt, who seemed to be awake but hazy from the good medication. This is Karen. You were asleep when she came. Foggy introduced her while also scooting over to make space on the blanket he was sitting on. Clint nodded, still a little too tired for polite conversation. But the situation didn't feel like small talk anyway. Instead, he looked up to Claire. A solution? He prompted. Yes, it's not perfect, but it has to work. Claire sighed. You have heard of Danny Rand? The co-CEO of Rand Enterprises, who was presumed dead for 15 years until he reappeared and tried to overthrow the entire way his company operates? Yeah, of course. What about him? Legally, he was never presumed dead, you know. Foggy commented, but the others ignored him. There's more to the story than the media knows. It's a lot to explain, and honestly, I'm not entirely sure I understand all of it myself. The important part right now is that he has a friend. He was involved in the whole shit show at Midland Circle, and probably most importantly, he owns a hospital and he has the means to get Matt in without too many awkward questions. I'm not going to a hospital. Matt muttered again. But other than Karen patting his arm and Foggy automatically answering, yes, you are, no one really cared about it. Clint was still a little confused by the whole, Danny Rand is also a superhero, revelation anyway. So how many heroes do you know, and how many of them were involved in the Midland Circle explosion? He asked, not actually expecting an answer. Well, there's Matt, Danny, Jessica, and Luke, who all have powers. And then there's Colleen, Misty, and Claire, who all were involved in the Midland Circle drama as well, Foggy commented. And then there are Malcolm, Trish, and us, who aren't directly involved, but were in the roster of the hand anyway because we're close to them, Karen added. You were there? Clint sputtered. Claire nodded absentmindedly. She was reading something on her phone and didn't seem like she was fully paying attention to the actual conversation anymore. I set the explosives, saved Misty's life, and watched Colleen behead a ninja. Clint blinked. He was used to superheroes being indifferent about missions they had been on, but Claire didn't quite seem like the type for that. But that wasn't really the most important thing right now. So, how are we going to give Matt to that hospital of Mr. Superhero Zero? He asked between bites of his egg fried rice. He's preparing a room and sending a medical transport tomorrow. Since Matty's not really in acute danger, we're playing it safe rather than rushing things. Foggy answered. I'm not going to hospital. Matt all but whined again. And that. Foggy rolled his eyes. That too. Clint nodded, yawning again. You're sleeping on the couch, Claire told him. The rest of us take turns staying with Matt and napping. Clint nodded again. A part of him wanted to argue, but now that the tension had drained off him, he was struggling to even keep his eyes open long enough to eat. After dinner, Clint was sent to the living room. He tried to argue, but after he had to repeat the same sentence twice because he couldn't get to the end without yawning, he accepted that he was no help in his current state. He decided to take a shower since he noticed he hadn't gotten a chance to do so since he pulled Matt from the ruins, and then got comfortable with his favorite book and a soft blanket on the couch. Karen and Foggy joined him a bit later, taking the two to armchairs on either side of the coffee table. After a moment, Clint offered them blankets and tea. They took the blanket, but Foggy insisted Clint stay on the couch, and he made the tea himself. The soft blanket, the warm tea, and the darkness that was starting to fall over the city were making Clint sleepy, and after another few minutes, when he could barely keep his eyes open anymore, Foggy looked over to him. "Sleep. It's okay. We'll wake you up when something happens, I promise." Clint nodded and put the book away. But before he actually lied down and got comfortable, he hesitated, a hand already hovering next to his ear. But Foggy just smiled. "Take them out. Get some actual rest. I may not know ASL, but we'll find a way to communicate." Clint nodded again, and after another second, he took the hearing aids out and put them on a coffee table next to his empty mug and the book. The next morning, Clint woke up to the aroma of coffee wafting over from the kitchen. "Coffee?" he asked while stretching and pushing himself upright. It took him a second to recognize the messy head of dark blonde hair as Foggy and remembered what was happening. He handed Clint a purple mug and held up a carton of milk. "Yes, please," Clint muttered, thankful he didn't have to put his aids in just yet. F-O-O-D. Foggy fingerspelled slowly and with a questioning expression. Clint couldn't help a quick, fond laugh before he answered. "I don't think I have a lot of food left, but maybe I can scrape together some pancakes." He tilted his head, going over the ingredients in his mind. He didn't have eggs, but flour, milk, and maybe some applesauce to put on them. "Give me a minute to wake up." Foggy nodded, smiling tiredly. "You didn't get much rest, did you?" Clint asked, and Foggy shook his head. "Wanna lay down a bit?" Foggy hesitated. "You don't have to sleep, just rest a bit." This time, he nodded, and Clint got up to sit on one of the armchairs. "The girls upstairs?" Clint asked, and Foggy made a gesture that Clint interpreted as "not quite." He sighed and stared at his aides for a moment. He didn't want to put them back in, especially since he had basically been wearing them for a week straight, but this was starting to get ridiculous, and there were enough difficult things happening that he didn't want to make it worse just for his own selfish reasons. He picked up the purple devices and checked the batteries. They were almost empty. "Gotta change these," he explained and went to the kitchen where the replacement batteries were charging. When he put the aids back in, they came to life with a shrieking sound and immediately brought a distant headache with them. Clint took a few deep breaths and a long sip of coffee before going back to the living room. "I can hear you again." Foggy offered an empathetic smile. "Good morning. I tried to learn some fingerspelling, but I'm not sure I'm doing all of them right." Clint smiled and nodded. He appreciated the gesture, but he also knew how long it took to actually learn to sign. "Claire's upstairs. Karen had to go to the office, but she'll join us at the hospital later." "How is he?" Clint gestured up the stairs. "Same as yesterday, I think. He's not complaining about his hearing anymore, so that's good. Claire said the cut is healing well, and he doesn't seem to be in too much pain right now. But the drive over will be rough. Just because he's still refusing to go, but also because of the pain." Clint nodded and stretched. He had emptied his mug and was now also starting to get hungry again. "I'll go to see if I can make pancakes or something," he said and got up again. Like he had expected, he didn't have a lot of ingredients, but he found a bag of flour and there was still enough milk left to make the basic pancakes Steve had taught him to make. They weren't as fluffy or sweet as modern American pancakes, but with a bit of a sweet topping, they still made a nice meal. When the pancakes were done, Clint and Foggy took them to the bedroom where Claire was sitting on the armchair next to the dozing mat again. "Good morning." Clint offered a smile and handed her a plate of pancakes. Foggy followed after him, swapping Claire's empty mug for a fresh coffee. The nurse yawned, but managed to smile. That smells amazing. Thank you. Glenn sat on the blanket on the floor, and Foggy took the seat on the bed, helping Mac take small bites. He said he still couldn't taste much of anything, and the pain seemed to dim his appetite, but he still ate almost a full plate. How is this going to work? Glenn asked, looking up to the others. Danny said the wen will be here around 12, Claire explained. Glenn looked at the alarm clock on the nightstand. It was almost 11:30. They'll take him in, do a quick checkup, and if they don't find anything that needs emergency treatment, they bring him to Dennis Hospital. He has a room ready, and a team of doctors will be checking him over. Orthopedics, ENT, neuro, I don't know what else. And depending on what they find, we continue from there. Glenn nodded. When he looked at Matt, he seemed like he wanted to pout, but even the pettiness wasn't worth moving. It was almost cute, and Clint could definitely understand the sentiment. They spent the time until Danny's medical van came mostly quietly drinking more coffee, except for one argument when Matt kept insisting that he could take coffee and Claire forbade it. The EMT came to a similar conclusion that Claire had made and agreed with her assessment that Matt probably had broken his hip or pelvis and the pain in his back was probably related. She didn't say anything about Matt being treated in Clint's bedroom and didn't ask questions about the origin of the injuries. Like Danny had promised, this was going over outside the books. At the hospital, Matt was taken into an exam room. Foggy joined him while Claire and Clint waited outside, where they were later joined by Karen. The wait seemed endless, especially since they were all tired and tense, not just from the last night, but from the entire week since the night of the fight. A young nurse had gotten the task of keeping them updated and came to the waiting room whenever there was a new finding. Claire had been right. Matt had some head trauma that had led to swelling that would take a while to go down. The swelling explained the loss of taste and smell and even some of the hearing loss. But the ENT also found some damage to Matt's ears. It wasn't substantial enough that it would cause him any significant disability, but it would definitely dampen his powers. They had also been right that the superficial wound and the deeper cut on Matt's stomach had been taken care of well so far. Clint's stitching might not have been perfect, but it was good enough that the doctor decided to leave it for a few more days until the wound was healed rather than redoing it surgically. And at last, Claire was even right in that Matt had broken his hip and a hairline fracture in his pelvis. The hip fracture was slightly unstable, and the orthopedic surgeon decided it was safer to fix it in surgery, especially given that Matt tended to have a very active life, as Foggy described it, and this would give him a higher chance at full recovery. While Matt was in surgery, Clint was pacing the hallway. It wasn't the first time he was waiting outside an operation room. He had watched almost all his closest friends being wheeled into surgery after missions or accidents. Every time, it had been a question of life and death, and every time it had been a close call when they made it out, hours later. This was different. This was a routine surgery. Matt wasn't in acute danger. He was stable, and Clint knew that he would leave the hospital in 2 weeks. But yet, somehow, he had never been this nervous. Maybe it was the fact that he had spent so much time caring for the man already. Or maybe it was the fact that he hadn't been in the fight that led to this himself. A part of it was definitely the guilt and the fear that he had made the mistake and made his injuries worse. But whatever it was, unlike the other times where he had simply sat in the waiting room, Clint was pacing the hall now. For a while, Foggy watched him pace before he went back to his laptop to work on case files. Karen did the same, working on research. And Claire had convinced a friendly young nurse that he show her the nurse break room. None of them spoke much. They were too deep in their own heads and their own worries about Matthew Murdoch. Surgery went well, but it took Matt a while to wake up. It was his first surgery, at least as far as Foggy and Karen knew, so it was hard to say if it was a reaction of his weakened body or if the anesthesia simply took a larger toll on his heightened senses. When he was finally awake and clear enough, Clint and Matt's friends were brought into his room. It was a small one-bedroom at the end of a hall. It seemed like it wasn't used regularly, maybe because it was tucked in behind a corner. But that also made it perfect for the purpose of hiding a patient who wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. While Foggy, Karen, and even Claire fussed over Matt, Clint took to stand at the edge of the room. As glad as he was that Matt had made it out of the OR, he didn't want to intrude on the intimate moment between him and his friends. It felt like he wasn't supposed to be there, like he wasn't wanted there. Matt still wasn't happy to be at the hospital, even after Danny had promised him that his secret identity and his heightened senses were safe from the public and would stay off any paperwork, as well as that Matt didn't have to worry about the cost of any of his treatments. Foggy, Karen, and even Claire didn't seem to see the expression of pain in his sightless eyes. They didn't see that Matt still didn't want to be there. He still wasn't convinced that living was worth surviving. But then again, they hadn't been in his position. They hadn't fought like Matt and Clint had fought. They hadn't faced this decision. After a while, a nurse came in. She brought Matt medication, checked his catheter and the bandages. As she left, she informed the others that Matt needed rest, which they all knew was the polite way of asking them to leave. Foggy gave Matt a careful hug. "You're a damn lucky idiot." It was meant as an endearment, but Clint saw that it still stung somewhere deep down. Karen still sat on the edge of the bed. When it was time to go, she took Matt's hand, holding it a moment too long, and when she got up, her eyes were red with tears. Promising that they'd come back the next day, all four went to leave. Clint was first at the door, holding it for the others. Claire left the room first, followed by Foggy and Karen. But just as Clint wanted to follow them and close the door, he heard Matt clear his throat. "Clint?" His voice was quiet and rough from disuse and the intubation after the surgery. The archer turned around, looking at Matt pushing himself into a more upright position in the hospital bed. "Yeah?" he asked when he realized Matt probably couldn't track his movements. "Stay?" Matt asked, a weak smile pulling at the corners of his mouth and pained hope in his eyes. "Yes?" Clint nodded, closing the door again and carefully sitting on the edge of the mattress. "Thank you," Matt breathed. It was careful that speaking hurt him, but Clint just rested a hand on his. "It's okay." "Stay, please." Matt repeated it. "You make me feel safe. And seen. Promise."